Got another question for you. Does God marvel at you? Does Jesus marvel at you? I don't know, but I do know that he could. I do know that he has. The word marvel, I suppose you get other definitions, but basically the word marvel means to be very impressed, surprised, or bewildered. To be very impressed, surprised, or bewildered. Does Jesus marvel at you? And if he does, is it a good thing or a bad thing that he marvels at you? We want to look into the mind of God today to see how he views us, because I think it's quite important to try to understand how God looks at us and what he expects of us and how he responds to us. That should be why we're here. 1 Chronicles chapter 28. 1 Chronicles chapter 28, there's a principle here that as God was getting Solomon ready to rule, he's getting us ready to rule. We're to be kings and priests in his family. In 1 Chronicles 28, verse 9 says, "As for you, my son Solomon, know the God of your father and serve him with a loyal heart and with a willing mind, for the Lord searches the hearts and understands all the intent of the thoughts. If you seek him, he'll be found of you, but if you forsake him, he'll cast you off." So, when God looks into your thoughts, does he marvel at you? There are a couple of situations in the Bible where he marvels. There's two recorded times when it specifically says that Jesus marveled. And we're going to talk about those two things today to see if he marvels at us. Our first story is that of the centurion and his servant. Let's turn to Luke chapter 7. In Luke chapter 7, we'll read over this story and then go back and analyze it a bit. In Luke chapter 7, verse 1, says he concluded all his sayings. He had just got done with the Sermon on the Mount, and he entered Capernaum. And a certain centurion servant who was dear to him was sick and ready to die. Verse 3, so when he heard about Jesus, he sent the elders of the Jews to him, pleading with him to come and heal his servant. And they came to Jesus, and they begged him earnestly, saying that one for whom he should do this was deserving, for he loves our nation, he's built us a synagogue. In verse 6, and Jesus went with them, and when he was ready, already not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying to him, "Lord, don't trouble yourself, for I'm not worthy you should enter under my roof." And we'll talk about these things in a moment. Verse 7, therefore I didn't even think myself worthy to come to you, but say the word, and my servant will be healed. I'm a man under authority, having soldiers under me. I say to one, go, and he goes, to another, come, and he comes. And to my servant, do this, and he does it. When Jesus heard these things, verse 9, he marveled at him. And he turned around and said to the crowd that followed him, "I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel." And those who were sent, returning to the house, found the servant well who had been sick. The centurion was a man who was a Roman soldier, enlisted by the Romans to have control. And he was a man who had control. He had control of his slave. He had slaves. This one in particular was one that apparently he liked, but according to Roman law, the centurion would have complete control over his slaves. He could even, for example, if the slave got sick or was incapacitated in some way and couldn't do his job, the Roman could kill the servant What use is to me anyway? It'd be like a donkey or an ox that when it's out of service, you just do away with it. Had that power. He was also in control of about 100 soldiers, centurion, they had anywhere from, I think, 80 to 100 soldiers under their control. And as we read in Luke chapter 7, verse 8, having soldiers under me, I say to one, you go, and he goes. To another, come, and he comes. And to my servant, do this, and he does that. He was a man who had power. He was a man who had control. He had control over the Jewish population under his care. See, the Romans owned the world at that time, pretty much. They had control over the area of Judea. And the Jewish population was under their direction and their whim. And they could do basically what they needed to maintain Roman control over these Jewish people. What is oftentimes the attitude of people with authority? Well, Jesus nailed it, didn't he? Jesus, in Matthew chapter 20 and verse 25, he said, you know that the rulers over the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. The norm for somebody with a little power is to exercise and to lord it over them. What do they say about power? Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely, something like that. It's just that's the normal mind. A Wikipedia article on centurions. It says, being held personally responsible for the training and discipline of the legionnaires under their command, centurions had a well-deserved reputation for dealing out harsh punishment. And then it gives one guy, not they weren't all this way, obviously, but here's one guy that it says in the annals, Tacitus tells a story of one centurion known as Cito Alterum, which roughly translates, give me another. So here was this centurion, and his nickname was give me another. And it says, the mutinous soldiers thrust out tribunes and the camp prefect, and they plundered the baggage of the fugitives and killed a centurion, Lucilius. And it's this centurion, Lucilius, that had the nickname, give me another. It says, to whom, with soldiers' humor, they had given a nickname, give me another, because when he had broken one stick across a soldier's back, he would call with a loud voice, give me another, and then give me another, as he broke these sticks across his soldiers' backs as he trained them. That was the type of person that Jesus was talking about. They said, you know, the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who are great exercise authority over them. Okay, so the centurion could be a real mean person. Our centurion has a different attitude. Our centurion, even though he had power, even though he had control, even though he was over people, he caused Jesus to marvel. And why was that? Towards his slave, in Luke chapter 7 and verse 2, it said, now a centurion had a bondservant who was held in honor and highly valued by him, who was sick at the point of death. He was highly regarded. The Greek, therefore, highly regarded means to be held in honor, to be prized, to be considered precious or dear. It's the same word that God uses to describe his son in 1 Peter 2, verse 4, when it says that Jesus was precious in the sight of God. So here's a guy that has a slave, and he respects his slave. He loves and cares for his slave. He cared what happened to him. Or he could have just killed him because he was like paralyzed and suffering and all those types of things, as another version of this says. But he cared for them. It shows an attitude. How do we care for people who are under us, if you will, the person serving us food in a restaurant, the person doing general tasks, the person that works for us? His attitude towards the Jewish population under his control was this, Luke chapter 7, verse 3. So when this centurion heard about Jesus, he sent elders of the Jews to him, kind of curious, pleading with him to come and heal his servant. And when they came to Jesus, these elders of the Jews begged Jesus earnestly, saying that the one for whom he should do this thing was deserving. Verse 5, for he loves our nation and has built us a synagogue. Here's a Roman centurion who, to the Jews and to the religious leaders of the Jews, they're not an indication that he was a Jewish convert, but he respected the Jews and respected their religion, and he treated them well. And it said he even, out of his own money, had a synagogue built for them. And, you know, the Bible talks about people that do good things will be pleasing in the sight of God and man. You know, and we can be pleasing in the sight of God and man by how we treat people, by how we respect them. And even though they were different than he was, with different beliefs, he respected them and he offered them assistance. What was the centurion's attitude toward Jesus? A man he had never met. He said he'd heard about him. Luke chapter 7 and verse 6. The centurion sends the message to Jesus and said, Lord, or sir, do not trouble yourself. I am not worthy that you should enter my roof. How did other Romans and even Jews view Jesus? Well, we know the end of the story for Jesus there, and they killed him. They crucified him. They took cat of nine tails to his back and spat on him, had no respect for him. And here is this centurion, and he says, sir, I'm not even worthy that you should come into my house. Verse 7, therefore I did not think it worthy to come in to you, but say the word and my servant will be healed. Notice he addressed him with respect. A man who had power, a man who had authority. A man who tells people go and they had to go and do this and they had to do that. And to come and they had to come. And here's this Jesus whom he hadn't met. He didn't know, except by what he had heard about him. And he says, sir. Now this Greek word, Lord, kurios, is a title of honor, and it expresses respect and reverence. It was used at times of the emperor of Rome, high governmental officials. And it also showed, you know, power, you know, that you recognize that he had power. This man did not come to Jesus and say, hey, JC, get over here and heal my servant, or I'll have your head. You know, could he have? Probably could have tried to demand that. But it wasn't the approach he had. Notice his attitude towards everybody. He showed respect. He showed humility. A centurion showing humility. Now, oftentimes we like to reduce respect to people by what we call them. You know, I'll give away if you haven't heard it already, but the message from Mr. Luker we're going to play next week. You know, in the end of it, he says, I just call me Denny. You know, and I personally have a hard time with that. I've done that to him on a few occasions, but I slip back into Mr. Luker, and I probably will continue to. But, you know, some people would use the word Denny lovingly and respectfully, and some to show that, who's he, Denny. Or you could say Mr. Luker in a derisive manner. You know, it shows an attitude, doesn't it? Do we show respect for all people, and particularly those of some position? Luke chapter 7 and verse 8, he says, "For I am a man placed under authority." He emphasized his authority. Yes, he had authority over others, he said, and he recognized that. But he emphasized the fact that he was under authority. And he knew how to do something when somebody said to do it. He knew how to respond to those that had any type of power over him, whether it be the civil authorities and so forth. And of course, he's using this to show that he recognized that, Jesus, when you say something, you've got ultimate authority because you have God as your Father. Now, this is interesting too, before we get on to the second story of Christ marveling, but here's this centurion. He recognizes God as the Father of Jesus, and because God's got sovereign power, Jesus, you say the word and my servant will be healed. So it showed a tremendous amount of faith in addition to just the type of person that he was. So what was Jesus' reaction to the way that this centurion approached things? Luke 7 and verse 9, "And when Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him." The New International Version says he was amazed at him. You know, there are people that say, well, you know, there's predestination, is that God knows everything, and Jesus knew everything anybody would do or said. No, he didn't. How could you be amazed at somebody if you already know what he's going to do? Say, okay, you're just doing what I knew you'd do. Anyway. Next time I'll be preaching on predestination, so that's why it's on my mind. But anyway, he marveled, he was amazed, and turned around and said to the crowd that followed him, "I say to you, I've not found such great faith, not even in Israel." There are statements that God makes in the Bible that it seems as though he expects those that are called to understand. But he expects people who have God's Spirit to follow through with and to do. And he kind of expects that those who are carnal won't get it. Just reading through and some of the things, and especially this. Philippians chapter 2 and verse 3, I'll just read it because these are a couple of short ones, but Philippians 2 and verse 3, it says, "With humility of mind, let each of you regard the other one as more important than himself." Now, that's a big mouthful. Is that each of us, not leaving anybody out, it says, regard other people, the person next to you, the person younger, the person older, just other people, your attitude, your frame of mind, regard them as better than yourself, or more important than yourself. The Greek word means to think of others as more superior, better than yourself, surpassing yourself. Well, they're like, I give deference to them because I feel I'm not quite at their level. This describes a centurion in my mind. I think when Christ was looking at that and who the centurion was and the power he had and this attitude of regarding others better than themselves, he regarded his slave as such that he wanted him healed. He regarded the people of Judea as important to him because he even had a synagogue built to him. He regarded Jesus as one that I'm not even worthy for you to come into my house. It says Jesus marveled and said, he gets it. He understands this. Does this verse describe me? Describe the centurion. Does this verse describe me? We each need to ask ourselves. If we all had this approach, that with humility of mind we regard another as more important than himself, how many problems would that solve in a marriage, on a job, in a church, in the world? Romans 12, verse 10 says, give preference to one another. Defer to the rights and the needs of others above our own. Give preference to each other. They come first. We defer to them. We treat them as if they were the rank of Jesus, in a sense, in principle. Mark chapter 10. Go ahead and turn to Mark chapter 10 and verse 43. Mark chapter 10. You know, if you or I had been in that circumstance and we had been the centurion with his same background, in the same circumstance, how would we have reacted in that situation? I don't know. Mark 10 and verse 43 says, whoever wishes to become great among you shall be your servant. Whoever wishes to be first among you shall be the slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for others. Do we treat others the way that we should treat our Lord? Do we have that type of respect, that type of honor? Do we treat our parents, our children, our spouses, our co-workers, our neighbor, friends, strangers we meet? How do we treat people? The centurion seemed to have humility towards everybody. Those with differing beliefs or different opinions. Luke chapter 6. I'll just turn there. But Luke chapter 6 verse 27 says, I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those that hate you. You know, most Romans despised the Jews, because they were just a lesser people. They were over them. You know, we whipped you. You know, you're ours. And most Jews, because of that, hated the Romans. But here's a man who was a centurion that kind of deferred to the Jews. He treated those that hated him well, and those that hated him ended up loving him. He said, here's a man that deserves respect. Here's a man that if anybody deserves to have his servant healed, it's this centurion, the Jewish leaders said. And so what goes around comes around in that way. There's a principle involved. When is the last time you went out of your way to do something good or nice to someone who despised you or hated you? It's not easy to do. It's easier to do something nice for somebody that did something nice for us. You know, we use the Christmas principle. I shouldn't say birthday principle or whatever, the same type of thing, is that most people with Christmas gifts, we don't give Christmas gifts, by the way. I'm not apt, so kids, you can turn those feelers off. It's okay. But for people that do Christmas, what oftentimes happens? Well, I get a gift this big, and so I will give a gift that big. And the next year, you get a gift this big and say, well, I gave them a gift that big last year, so I'm only giving them a gift this big. And so you kind of do it in proportion. Or they didn't send me anything, so I'm not sending them anything. You know, we like to do things for people in a way that people do to us. But he said, even love your enemies. And don't give Christmas gifts, by the way. The centurion followed Jesus' ethic. He'd sacrificed in doing good for a people that he was over. Does Jesus marvel at you? Does Jesus marvel at us as a group? Do we display such a great degree of humility and faith that it's said of us, when God looks at us, I marvel at him, at what humility he has or she has, what faith that he or she has? does he marvel? Or does God marvel at us for another reason? Turn to Matthew chapter 8. Matthew chapter 8. And verse 10. So when the centurion behaved like he did, he had the faith that he did, and the trust in God that he had, and the humility. Matthew 8, verse 10 says, when Jesus heard this, he was amazed. And turning to those who were following him, he said, I tell you the truth, I haven't seen faith like this in all Israel. This was a Gentile. In Israel, you would expect better. Gentiles, you expect them to be mean and, you know, not handle the authority well and everything, like he said, of others. In verse 11, he says, and I tell you this, many Gentiles will come from all over the world, from east and west, and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob at the feast in the kingdom of heaven, because they'll end up getting it. In verse 12, it says, but many Israelites, those for whom the kingdom was prepared, will be thrown into utter darkness where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. He has a certain standard for those that he's calling. And you could use the nation of Israel on one hand, but use spiritual Israel in this circumstance. And God gives us a calling, and he's prepared the kingdom for us. And he's got certain expectations. But he said, everybody is not going to live up to that expectation, unfortunately. Luke chapter 17 and verse 9. You know, we talked about this attitude of humility, about the attitude of service, about thinking of others more than we think of ourselves, about being able to do good to our enemies. All these words, do they mean things to us? Does it describe us? And if it does, well, is God marveling at us and say, wow, what a good job. That's amazing. You are so good. I think he's saying in verse 17, if we do get chapter 17, verse 9, if we do get it, it says, and does that master thank the servant for doing what he was told to do? Of course not. God opens our mind and he calls us and said, I want you to have the mind of Christ. When you're baptized, that's what you're doing. You say, I repent of the way that I've gone, and I want to have the mind of Christ. I want to think like he thinks. I want to do what he does. I want to repent. I want to change. I want to have the law of love for God and the love for man inside of my heart, and obviously a part of my actions. And so when we're given the Holy Spirit to help us do that, and we actually do it, we get extra praise for doing that which we're called to do? I kind of think not. Verse 10 of Luke 17, the Amplified Version, says, even so on your part, when you have done everything that was assigned and commanded you, say, we are unworthy servants, possessing no merit, for we have not gone beyond our obligation. This is the Amplified Version, which extends a bit there. It says, we have merely done that which was our duty to do. You know, if you love somebody, even though they don't love you, it's your duty. That's good. It's commendable. And we should do that. But is it like extra special? Does he marvel when we simply follow his commands? No, I think he appreciates it. He loves us for it. He gives us more help. He's on our side. He's with us. He's applying his sacrifice to us for the mistakes we make and the whole thing. But has he given us extra credit? Jesus also marvels at why some people don't get it. He marveled at the centurion because he kind of shouldn't have been able to get it, but he got it. He went against all of the standards of the time for a person in that position. Turn to Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 6. verse 1, the New Living Translation, it says, Jesus left that part of the country and returned with his disciples to Nazareth, his hometown. And the next Sabbath he began teaching in the synagogue, and many who heard him were amazed. And they asked, where did he get all this wisdom, the power to perform such miracles? That's incredible. Look at what he's able to do. Look how wise he is. Look at all the things that he's saying that are so meaningful. Wow, this is amazing. You think, oh, they're so amazed that they're just going to like go head over heels in following him and to do the things that he says. But here are all these people that knew him. They'd seen him grow up. They knew he was a good kid. They knew he was obedient to his parents. They knew that he knew the Bible. And he went and he could preach in the synagogue at age 12. They knew this guy. They were impressed with him and said, wow, he's so smart. He has such power. They should have been motivated to believe. But notice what it says in verse 3. Then they scoffed. Wow. He's just a carpenter. You know, that derisiveness. The centurion said, Lord, sir, you're not worthy to come under my house. I mean, you're the man. And to Jesus, these that should have known better says he's just a carpenter. The son of Mary and brother of James and Joe and Jude and Simon. And his sisters live right here among us. And they were deeply offended and refused to believe him. They were offended at Jesus when they should have been the ones first in line to help him and to serve him and say, wow, it's amazing what God's done through you. I'll just quote Matthew 24, verse 10. Matthew 24, 10 says, many will be offended in the end time and betray one another and will hate one another. Now, that's what it says in the end time, even within the body of Christ, that would happen. And many false prophets will rise up and deceive many. You've got to know the truth to be deceived. And because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold. So this will be kind of an atmosphere towards the end, whenever that is. And when we're deeply offended because of Jesus and refuse to believe him when he says, defer to one another. Serve one another. Think of others better than yourselves. We refuse to believe him if we don't do it, don't we? Don't we? Mark chapter 6 and verse 4, Jesus told them, a prophet is honored everywhere except in his own hometown and among his relatives and his own family. And we're the family of God. We are. We're the family of God. Verse 5, and because of their unbelief, he couldn't do many miracles among them except to place his hand on a few sick people and heal them. And Mark chapter 6 and verse 6, and said he marveled because of their unbelief. He marveled at the centurion because of his belief. He marveled at the centurion because the centurion got it. Because the centurion understood humility and respect and referring to others and feeling, I'm not even worthy to be under your, have you under my roof. And then there were those who had the attitude of superior. Well, he's only Jesus, the carpenter's son. When the centurion recognized he's a son of God. Who does he think he is acting so great? I'm not going to submit myself to him. I changed his diapers when we grew up. He's not even worthy to come into my house. These are the ones that should have known better. And because they should have known better and reacted in that way, it says Jesus marveled at them. when we do what we are to do because we're called and because we've got God's Spirit, he says, good job, that's fine. But you don't get like extra praise because that's the thing that you're called to do. It's the way we should behave. That's the minimum requirements of a Christian. For someone who is called in the situation like the centurion was, he marvels and says, wow, you got it. Good job. I'm pleased. To those of us that should know better and just don't, he said, I've given you my Spirit. I've given you a chance. I've given you the directions. Why didn't you follow through? You're part of my family. Do you disrespect me because you're part of the family? Do you not think that my word works? That my way works? And I think sometimes he marvels. When our story is written in the closing chapters of the book of Acts, I don't think the book of Acts is done yet. I think it'll go on. There's the end at the end of it. And our story will be written. What will our story be? Your story. Will we be offended at God and Jesus Christ? Will we have exalted ourselves to a position of pride, to a position of superiority over others, unable to submit to one another? Will it be said of any of us, he marveled at their unbelief? Or will we get it? Will we individually and collectively follow the admonition of the Master and do as he said, that with humility of mind, let each of you regard the other as more important than himself? I don't think even for the converted, it's an amazing thing to do when we do it. Will it be said of us, when Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him. He turned around and said to the crowd that followed him, I say to you, I've not found such great faith, no, not even in Israel.